A very warm welcome to our very first podcast episode. That is not quite true though, because we have recorded this first episode already several times by now, which is titled, Why Does Billbox Exist and Why a Podcast? And we hope that the technology plays along today and we can successfully wrap up this first episode. I would like to start off by introducing myself to you. My name is Celia Beckmann. I am actually the daughter of Florian Beckmann, who is my co-host, so to speak, who will also be introducing himself shortly. I recently finished my master's in international security and, over the years, have worked on various Billbox projects, either together with my brother or on my own, whether that was at trade fair booths, giving presentations, in training sessions, or even with my own project, Billbox Leaf. We will definitely dive into that again in one of our other upcoming episodes. Exactly, and as a team, we thought that it would be a really awesome idea to start a podcast. Yeah, absolutely. Just to try out a completely different format, so to speak, and we will see how it all goes and whether you, our listeners, will find it just as cool as we actually do. Yeah, so I'll just hand it over to you. Florian, would you like to quickly introduce yourself?
Yes, I am Florian Beckmann, and it was almost a quarter of a century ago that I started my very first business in my life. With the vision of making commercial processes and accounting easier, building a strong entrepreneurial network. And out of that effort, Billbox emerged, among other things, as a platform too. Take boring things like accounts receivable and accounts payable, and digitally transform them. And of course, they are not, I don't find them boring at all, but to most, it feels like that when thinking of accounting, banking, receipts, hearing taxes and singing, that seems really boring at first. Yeah, and I'm still fascinated by the topic, and of course it's being really challenged now, first by your generation and by topics such as AI. And how can we integrate that even further? Well, that is precisely what we are currently looking into now. And I find it to be just as exciting that we now, first and foremost as Billboxes, but secondly also as family members of completely different generations. And also, as father and daughter will be dealing with these topics. I'm really looking forward to it.
Speaking of AI, podcasts are obviously a really interesting format as well, seeing how they have totally taken off again over the last couple of years. And maybe that also has something to do with the fact that the younger generation is indeed looking for, not old ways, but perhaps similar paths to the ones you have already taken, in order to maybe allow themselves to really dive so much more deeply into each of these specific areas, topics, or formats. And that is why I think this podcast is going to be a really great opportunity for various prospects and, of course, existing Billbox customers to take a much closer look at Billbox itself, but also to see Billbox as a company and as a family-run business from a different perspective. And I'm definitely very excited to see how it goes and what kind of feedback we'll get. I already asked you this question last time, but of course, our listeners don't know that yet. Do you actually listen to podcasts yourself sometimes?
Really, it is actually quite rare for me. Most of the time, I don't really have those long, relaxed blocks of time, or at least up until this point in time, I have rarely taken the time to listen to a format so deeply and for so long. So I am a relative newbie. I have only ever listened to one single complete audiobook in my entire life. That was actually a sensational experience, and barely any like whole podcasts or podcast series, not at all up to this point.
So what kind of audiobook was it that you were able to finish then?
That was The Dark Side of the Moon, or rather Die Dunkle Seite des Mondes by Martin Suter. And I actually listened to almost all of it on a long car ride. And then, interestingly, at the place where I arrived, there was a fireplace burning and a library. And I then finished reading the last 20 pages of the book there in the evening. So for me, it was a groundbreaking multimedia experience.
Okay, that is really quite exciting. Yeah, maybe I do not really know whether or not we can hope for listeners who are that fascinated, who would actually spend a 7 or 8 hour drive in the car listening to our podcast and then kind of listen to it while cozying up by the fireplace in the evening. That would indeed be absolutely wonderful, of course, but maybe we should try to stay a bit more realistic for our podcast for now and say we focus on making sure the listeners can follow our voices and our conversation for 20 or 30 minutes. Yeah, but I really do have to say that for my own part, I find podcasts to be super exciting and super cool. In my free time, I listen to a whole lot of different formats from Die Zeit, but also true crime podcast formats. So yeah, I think it probably reminds me a bit of my childhood too. My brother and I used to listen to tons of CDs and audio plays back then, so podcasts are really a welcome change. And it is also a really nice change of pace from just listening to music on Spotify, the radio, or reading the newspaper on your mobile phone. So I definitely think that listening is making a comeback, and I think it's great that we're now using that for the Billbox too. I think that we can actually move right along to the topic for today. Now, besides the question of why we're doing a podcast, we've already touched on that a little bit. And today's topic would be a little bit about how did Billbox itself actually come about in the first place. It wasn't always called Billbox, or rather, you had different companies that eventually led to Billbox. And if you would like to do so, it would be really great if you could perhaps give us a very quick overview of the last probably 25 years and how you actually even came to found all of these different companies back in the 90s.
That makes me shockingly aware of just how incredibly old I am. But the whole thing actually starts... I think it started very early on, of course, with both of us, and you as well, ultimately coming from a very entrepreneurial family. For a very long time, we actually used to brew beer for 7 generations back in Solingen over in Germany. And there has always been this entrepreneurial spirit. I think, I don't know whether that is hereditary or just habit. During my university studies, I naturally focused quite a great deal on business administration. And then when looking back on it today, I believe that I was just incredibly lucky. I studied in St. Gallen and knew back then that we had to have 6 months of work experience. And I went straight to uni after school and the military. So I hadn't learned anything practical yet, except the military. And then actually ended up in Venezuela. That was great for one thing, and secondly, it was at an accounting and tax consulting firm, auditing tax consulting at KPMG. And on the one hand, I really enjoyed that, and on the other hand, it also kind of demystified accounting for me. And I've actually always thought, man, there's got to be an easier way. And then back in those days, there was this contact with a very large automotive company. They had a very, very, I think even one of the most expensive installations of SAP. And then there was also this question, man, it is already all completely automatic. And somehow this desire arose to organize the invisible commercial business processes of companies in a cool way that you could really get network effects, automation, that was quite early on, that you could somehow get all these dependencies of people and software and stuff out of the picture. And then, of course, there was this desire to somehow foster more of an entrepreneurial network. And so the goal was to advise all these different entrepreneurs. So for a long time, I was really heavily focused on this consulting work. And out of that, we basically created this platform or software or whatever you want to call it, which is called Billbox today. And that was basically the whole story of how it came to be. And now we actually only focus on optimizing these commercial processes for all kinds of industries in all kinds of countries, for very small companies, but also for very large companies and everything in between.
Would you perhaps like to take another very quick, slightly more detailed look back at these last 25 years? Or I think it would be nice if we could understand a bit more, how it somehow went from, actually, yes, from being focused on the hotel and restaurant industry to realizing that Billbox is actually for any company, no matter what the size is, no matter how many employees they have, no matter what kind of industry, actually always makes total sense. Maybe you could sort of describe this whole development to us just a bit more.
Yeah, I think that really came from that whole experience back then, working at Porsche and SAP, among others, and just how cool all that automation stuff was. And then, of course, I had this whole brewery thing going on. So it was somehow kind of obvious, and I thought, okay, to put it a bit more casually, those big, amazing corporations supposedly already had that kind of stuff. And then I thought to myself, well, why don't we start with the industries where supposedly things aren't quite as well organized? And back then, hospitality, or the hotel and catering industry, right around the turn of the millennium, those were really the first sectors. And for a few years, I actually thought it only made sense for those industries because supposedly everyone else already had it. And then that basically all came about through renewed contact with the people I was fortunate enough to learn from back in those days, who said, yeah, that wasn't actually true. None of it was automatic with our ERP and super corporate solutions. And then actually came the realization that even the hospitality and catering sectors are actually even less complex because, for example, they pretty much only have complexity in supplier and accounts payable relationships, and not necessarily so much in accounts receivable, because they very often don't even issue invoices like, say, many companies do, and then check if they're paid. But for hotels, for example, it's already been working like this for years, that guests book and pay via credit card, so there's actually not much invoicing going on. But that actually does indeed happen at many other companies, which simply means there was even more complexity that we are able to solve in other industries rather than just the ones we actually started out in back then. We are simply interested in solving this complexity, and we truly do believe we can map that even better with Billbox. The more complicated and difficult it actually becomes, more international, crazier, or more heterogeneous this whole commercial world of these clients is. And that's how it turned out, that the value creation wasn't actually in a specific industry, but in the complete digitization of a specific process.
So then I guess I actually do have one more question to ask now, and that is, Billbox is currently active in, I would say, so to speak, Switzerland, Germany, the Czech Republic, and so forth. Could you please especially go into greater detail about this Germany and Switzerland dynamic?
Well, of course, that has many, many different facets, as you can easily hear. I am German. But basically, I think I have a very European mindset. And for me personally, though the Swiss might not really like to hear this, Switzerland belongs to Europe and Europe to Switzerland. Whether that's the EU or not, that's really beside the point. I mean, that's basically, for me, it doesn't make that much of a difference, as long as it has some kind of European context. Of course, we have that, and there are also completely different companies actively operating in Switzerland as well as in Germany. Of course, we do make a distinction between these markets, but basically, we actually started with the first international clients back then, and then also with the first Swiss clients. We basically successfully established our main corporate headquarters in Zurich back at that time and are now actively operating in a whole range of countries. But I do think all of the countries actually get along very well indeed. And the commercial processes are, I believe, very, very similar. They aren't really that dependent on countries or industries. I don't know if that's what you mean by your question. Or what differences and connections between Switzerland and Germany do you mean?
I don't think I had anything specific in mind. Maybe I was thinking a bit about the safety aspect. Or that's kind of what I had in my head. Like we want to somehow secure our own data somewhere within Europe with Switzerland as a secure country, Germany, and so on and so forth. So why is this idea of origin even important for Billbox?
Yes. Well, that is, of course, a truly favorite topic of mine to discuss. So first and foremost, are there indeed actually any specific legal or statutory reasons? For example, to be very brief without boring everyone, the EU, of course, has some very specific opinions on where data should be kept, which I personally fully support. Switzerland has the same thing. Part of this data that Billbox processes, Billbox is also a part of their clients' bookkeeping. And then the countries and also the economic areas have certain ideas about where this data should be stored. And I fully support that and think it's absolutely right. And so Switzerland, not being a member of the EU or the EEA, prefers or basically says, look, accounting data should really stay in my country. And the EU or Germany does the exact same thing and says, look, when it comes to accounting data, we want that. Honestly, we want to know where that's stored. And on top of these legal formal requirements, I'm also personally a big fan of what's luckily becoming trendy right now and has been getting a lot more attention in recent months, which is also the digital autonomy of Europe. And I quite explicitly subscribe to that, as I am a very huge fan of Europe being fully aware of what the digital rules of the game actually are, where the data is stored, what the dependencies are, and who might have what data and uses it for what. And especially when we're talking about very sensitive data, purchasing, accounting, payments, banks, and stuff like that, I'm a total fan of clients knowing exactly where exactly their data is located and that it is also being properly protected and actively defended. That's just to say it a bit more clearly or provocatively.
Now we've actually arrived in the present or almost even in the future with these kinds of questions. Digitalization, what does the future hold for us there? Who actually has a right to my own data or the data of my company? I would really like to take a step back for a moment, or perhaps look at the bigger picture as a whole once again, and finally ask, what has actually changed for Billbox itself as a company? For you as an entrepreneur within Billbox, and maybe also from your own perspective, for those clients and customers who are dealing with digitization and want to become more digital, because I think we have both seen this so many times at trade shows, just this general statement of, well, we're already super digital, which you also just touched upon briefly. Like how different industries claimed back in the early 2000s, like, yeah, digitalization, we have our tools for that, we don't really need it right now. And exactly like this general statement, we're already fully digital and this Billbox thing, we don't need any of that, we've already got it all. How has digitalization really changed, and how has maybe your approach changed and the approach of Billbox?
Looking back over the last few years, I can see that it has always been an evolutionary process. To put it casually, that basically means I feel like I am always standing at the very beginning of a new wave of digitalization. We are noticing right now that, first of all, the level of expertise is generally increasing, and that the different disciplines are merging together. What does that mean? 10 years ago, if you just said, what do I want? I want to cut costs. Or sometimes people said, I want to digitalize, without really asking why actually. Yeah, cutting costs. Then people often realize that the costs were only seemingly reduced. Meanwhile, other topics are now coming into focus. We actually need end-to-end data models. What you actually need are collaborative workflows. You have these, well, buzzwords or jargon like system interoperability. What you want is financial accounting, bookkeeping, you have payment processing somehow, you have business intelligence, you have ERP, an inventory management system, you have different things that don't always use the same system, and even if there's one logo on top of it, you actually have completely different formats and things. And that's merging, and it's not merging by always using interfaces or deciding which software talks to which, but I think it's coming, and that is also partly my hope, that there is more and more process thinking among managers and entrepreneurs. decision makers in companies who simply say, wait, I don't really want to keep introducing software and then wait and see. And after a year, wonder what else to digitize now, but saying, yes, I have a process here. Let's define it first, what it looks like if it were really good, regardless of whether it's analog or digital. And then you translate that into a fully digital world. And I think that is something that has greatly grown and improved. And I'm hoping that will happen, and I really feel that strongly.
Then I think that I would say, yeah, we can wrap things up by saying that we are very much looking forward to the next episode. We are also looking forward maybe to getting to learn a little bit more about these topics. Like, why is Billbox actually the way that it is today? And what exactly has also improved over the last 10 to 20 years? What can we work with? What can we build on? How has this process-oriented thinking evolved? And yeah, then thank you for your time and see you in the next episode.